Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now, it is time to look back over the best stuff you called in and texted me about. And we like to call it
F-I-I-E-N-D-S.
Jen's Friends.
Just Friends.
Yes, and this week my friend is Martin Worthington, Associate Professor in Middle Eastern Studies at TCD, who we first spoke to when he translated an ancient language for Marvel movies. We got him on to talk about that, and we had such fun. Such fun, Martin. We had to get you back on again. Good morning.
Good morning to you too, and to everybody else.
It's great to have you on the show. How's life?
I'm very lucky and very happy. The same can't be said of everybody, but, you know, yeah.
Good. Well, that's good to hear. That is good to hear. Listen, we need to talk about the big stories of the week, OK? And one thing that really got people going and texting in was about the delays at Dublin Airport, these crazy, crazy delays at Dublin Airport and people's just travel stress. What are you like when you travel? Are you honest? Like, is the passport in the bag? Are you, you know, have you got everything organised? Do you leave 4 hours before?
Oh, gosh. I think at different times in my life, I've been a more or less successful traveller. I generally get to the place in the end, but the amount of stress varies hugely. And from the age of probably, I don't know, 16 to 26, I was a menace to myself. The number of times I got to the airport and realised that the bag I thought containing the passport didn't actually contain the passport. Let me see. Oh, do you want the most probably stressful story of all?
Absolutely.
Well, actually, this comes in two halves. So the first half is about the missing passport, which is kind of simple. It's the day of departure and the passport isn't there. Mm-hmm. So I'm going back home. My mum's Italian, so home is Italy at the time. And I have to go and get the... I have to go to the police and people I know have to authenticate me. And mum has to go to the police in Italy and they have to authenticate her. And at the airport then, you know, I'm entrusted into her care on the assumption she probably really is my mother, etc., etc. So that's the stressful part of the story. And now for the denouement, which unfolds in stages. So at the time, I was at an English boarding school. This was not one of the big fancy posh ones. It was a state-run boarding school. I was very happy to be there. And this is where the loss of the passport occurred. So months later, one of my teachers at the school says, Martin, yes, I've got your passport. Mm. Yes. I found it on the floor of the staff common room, says the teacher. And I think, gosh, that's strange. So this is phase two of the story. Months later, I suddenly have the passport, which I'd lost. In the meantime, I think a replacement had been issued. But then we started putting it together. And I eventually remembered that I had once been to that teacher's house for tea, together with other students in the same subject. He'd very kindly invited us. And of course, I go along in my big coat, and my big coat contains my passport, because I'm too disorganised to put it somewhere safe. Needless to say, being the kind of guy who loses his passport on a regular basis, I also forgot my coat at the teacher's house. So, responsible person that he was all those months ago, what had he done? He'd gone through the pockets to check if there was anything important. He'd found my passport, put it aside for safekeeping.
Good on him.
Forgotten all about it. And then in due course given my coat back to me, but both he and I had forgotten that the passport had been in the pocket. So probably 6 months later, this poor man is leafing through his filing cabinet, finds Martin's passport, goes, oh my God, what do I do? And this is where the absolute gem shows up for me. You have to conjure up this image of this man saying, well, okay, I don't want to fess up that I just forgot all about it, because that's not very politic, fine. I forgive myself for not doing that. But equally, I don't want to involve any students so it doesn't look like a student prank, they stole his passport. So what's the only safe place that will exculpate all the pupils at the school? The staff common room. So he probably goes to the staff common room. I see him in my mind's eye, carefully putting the passport on the floor, turning a pirouette of 360 degrees and going, oh, look what's on the floor. I'd better pick it up. Martin's passport. So then he calls me, he gives it back to me. And years later, the whole story emerges in its confused entirety. And here I am rambling it to you on the radio.
Well, it definitely wasn't a ramble. Did you thank him for looking after your passport, a box of chocolates, a bottle of wine, anything like that? No. Young lads don't think like that, do they? It's normally their mammy's telling them to thank someone who's found their passport or something.
That's a very good idea. He's probably retired by now, but maybe if I sent him a mystery box of chocolates in the post, he could wonder what it was all for.
This is for my passport all those years ago. Boarding school. Interesting. My mother went to boarding school in Ireland, in Port Leash, in Abbey Leaks, actually. And not weirdly, but there's this perception of boarding schools that they're these horrible, very strict places. And no, she absolutely loved it. Loved being in boarding school, loved it. Did you love it? Did you like it? How was your experience?
Oh, that's a very long conversation. I think I was very confused about all sorts of things at the time. I'll tell you, my grandmother, who was also at boarding school sometime in the 1930s probably, really enjoyed her time there. She'd talk about it still when she was late in her 90s. The episode that stands out for me is when, arriving fresh from Italy, I was asked to take part in a game of touch rugby. Now, I was never much of a sportsman, and rugby's really not my thing. And nobody had properly explained the rules to me. So I'm standing there in this field, it's a nice spring day, and I'm kind of minding my own business. And this huge, horrible, flying object comes towards me like a missile, falling into my arms. I wasn't even trying to catch it. It sort of just deposited itself there. So I look around, and next thing you know, all these monster gorilla types are running towards me. So, of course, I do the only logical thing, which is to run backwards as fast as possible. And when the gorillas are finally upon me, it seems that they want the missile. So what do? I throw it forwards with all my strength. It turns out I had broken the only two rules in the game, which is that you can't run... What is it? You can't run...
I have
forwards.
No idea.
You can't run backwards and you can't throw the ball forwards. Anyhow, so I broke them. I was never asked to play again. And that was a deep satisfaction.
You're like, yes! Achieved! I'd never have to play this horrible sport ever again. But apart from that incident, an enjoyable experience. Pros and cons.
But I remember, again, fresh from Italy, my colloquial English wasn't up to much at the time because I had most of it from my parents and books. And in another sports session, again, they were getting us to sort of run with our shoulders to bash into some massive thing the teacher was holding. It was probably a proper duty exercise for tackling. And the teacher said, you'd have to be just a tad higher. Of course, I didn't understand. A tad is an informal word meaning, you know, a small amount.
Yeah.
I thought it was a unit of measurement, like a yard or a foot or an inch. So I was asking people, like, what is a tad? How big is it? And they were just saying, oh, it's just a small amount. Yeah, but how small?
How small? Give me the
measurements! Give me the millimetres! Exactly,
Jeepers.
Exactly.
Jeepers.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Well, you had to deal with a lot there, an awful lot. I want to talk about something because obviously you talk about being Italian heritage. On Wednesday, right, Martin, we got loads of texts about one of the big questions in life. Why do restaurants give you bread before the meal? What is going on there? I went out for dinner last night and I put it to my friends, this conversation we were having. I said there were so many different theories that came in and we really couldn't get to the bottom of it because it doesn't make any sense. If you come around to my house, Martin, before I give you three-course dinner, I'm not going to give you two slices of toast. You know what I mean? So do you have a theory on that? Why do Italians do it? Why? What's the reason?
Well, first of all, I've got a theory about having theories. Do you know that book, The Life of Pi?
Yeah.
It's about a guy on a raft with a tiger for months on end. And then when finally he's released and the insurance company come, they say the story doesn't add up. And he says, look, you're going to give me, or the shipping company, whoever, the insurance money is going to be paid out, right? That's going to happen. You're not going to stop that. So what do you prefer to believe? Do you prefer to believe I made it all up, or do you prefer to believe I was really on a raft with a tiger? And of course, this is probably some complicated metaphor for religious belief, but I thought it's quite nice. In the context of this conversation about the bread, I suppose ultimately there is probably no single answer that fits all. So it's partly about what you want to believe. So do you want to follow the more cynical line of explanation that probably says, well, if we stuff them up with a load of bread before they get onto the expensive meal, then we can afford to have smaller portions.
We're also cynical. That's where we got to last night because the portions were so small. We're like, they're trying to fill us with bread because they're being scabs, Martin. They're being scabs with the dinner. And does that say something about us because we're cynical?
Well, yeah.
Probably.
You could choose the cynical line. There might be an alternative line, which is, you know, give us this day our daily bread. So maybe it's deeply symbolic. You know, we see you're coming to have, quote unquote, your daily bread. So let's start by giving you that. So we tick the box. And now that you have your daily bread, well, we can move on to the beef bourguignon and the mushroom omelette. I don't know. Of course, the real bread that you want to have is bread sticks, because they have the added advantage that you can have fights with them.
Oh,
many's
yeah.
the time in Italy when I've had sword fights with friends and I generally lose, but it passes the time. And the advantage is that, you know, like chocolates on Easter, they look like something else, but then you eat them. These are breadsticks, which after having served their function as swords can go into the gullet. So I'd recommend the consideration of breadsticks alongside the bread.
If you want a fancy restaurant, get rid of the bread, get the breadsticks out, and we'd all be a lot happier. That's a very, very good point, Martin. Well made. Let's talk about perks of the job, because what was the story? Oh, yeah, ESB. We all find out ESB give their employees just a discount on their bills throughout the year, and the nation were not very happy about that, but you know, they don't demand higher paid jobs and all this kind of stuff. And we got a lot of texts in from various people in various jobs, the perks they get. Americans are great at giving mental health days, very, very good at that. Mental health days, company cars, parties on Fridays, all these different perks of the job. What are the perks? First of all, just in case, what do you do exactly? I gave your full title there, but what do you do, Martin?
I'm glad that people don't ask me that too often. What do I do? Well, most academic jobs have three parts. There's teaching, there's research, and there's administration.
Yeah.
So teaching is, you know, reading your students' essays or giving lessons or lectures or conducting seminars. Research is trying to find out new stuff. Sometimes it's going through archives or, you know, many different forms. It can be tables of statistics. And then administration is everything that isn't those two things.
Boring admin. Do you hate the admin part, Martin? Do you hate that part?
Well, it's very necessary. But, you know, I'm sure with your radio station it's the same. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah, I have minions to do that. They don't do, I don't do a tap of that. I don't. I'm far too important to do stuff like that.
Well, you're a rich and powerful woman,
yeah.
but your minions are necessary. And if they just disappeared and the admin vanished, right,
useless.
Then the station would find it harder to deliver its services. So it's probably true that the research and the teaching are the more fun parts of the job. But, you know, you grit your teeth and you get through the admin, because if nobody did it, then the university would grind to a halt. Mm. I mean, my salary is paid through admin. I don't want all the admin to vanish overnight. That would be kind of inconvenient.
Perks of the job.
Oh, yes, I know we're not supposed to be talking about difficult things right now. It's just, you know, the kind of self-indulgent phenomenon of me sitting here saying how great my job is, which it is, while all over the world there are people having massive problems. Let's just kind of acknowledge that and move on to how great my job is.
Okay.
I really enjoy my job. Perks as such, I don't think of it like that. So the other day I was in a museum and I had a class of art history students who were from another course. And I had the privilege, the fun of talking them through a number of objects in the museum, sort of in roughly chronological order. And to kick off the whole thing, we took a Mesopotamian cylinder seal, which
love
is
them.
An object. Yeah, it's about the size of your little finger. It's made of stone and you can roll it over plasticine and it produces this imprint that goes on forever because it's so cleverly carved. The scene just repeats itself. And so we had this class full of intelligent, mature people who, like 5-year-olds, were, you know, squeaking
with a new toy.
They were giggling with this new toy and they were all making their plasticine, and then we moved on to more serious things. But it was so much fun, and that's a huge perk of the job.
Absolutely, absolutely, and well said. I need to ask you before you go. Another one from Wednesday was the new leave insert reform and the move towards continuous assessment. We got calls from students, teachers, and parents, and they all had very different views on this. You must have done loads of exams over the years. Do you remember any exams going completely wrong? No.
Exams I've sat or exams I've...
You've sat.
Oh, gosh. Well, yes. When I was doing A-level history, I completely messed up the timings of my questions. I got it all worked out. It was 4 questions in 3 hours, so 45 minutes per question. So when the exam starts, I'm sitting at my desk. I look up. I see the finish time, which is, I don't know, 12 o'clock. And I say, right, I'll start my final question at 11:15. So come 11:15, I start writing my final question, and a couple of minutes later, the invigilator says, "Candidates for A-level history have 5 minutes left." At which point I turn into a blistering frog and I say, "But what? And of course, then I look more carefully at the board, And there were two different history A-level papers going on in the same room at the same time. And they had different finishing times. And in my stress, all I saw was what I wanted to see. History A-level, 12 o'clock. I didn't see the words next to it. I didn't see the words below. So what happened was that clearly my third question, I ended up spending loads of time on. And my fourth question, I just wrote a few scrappy notes on. And I can't remember what mark I got overall. I don't think it was very high. And that was stressful.
Well, I bet you did. Okay. But would you think it's fairer to students to do more continuous assessment, or is that unfair to, you know, messers like myself who might struggle to behave for the full year?
Oh, but this is a very complicated issue, and it's a conversation that needs to be had with a lot of careful reflection and lots of different parties involved. Yeah. Factors to consider are there does seem to be a trend in the rise of mental health problems across students in recent years. Some people blame it on social media. Of course, lockdown would have had a big part to play. And it's generally seems to be agreed that continuous assessment can be more conducive to the performance on the part of people who are having difficulties.
Gotcha.
So that's one thing to think about. I think the other question is what kind of skills it is that we want to breed. I mean, for example, if you're writing about literature, you know, a novel, a poem, is something that you should think about carefully, at leisure, allow your thoughts to intersect, remind you of other poems. So writing an essay about it over 2 weeks, I think, is a much truer reflection of the kind of thing you're supposed to be doing with this poem than a three-hour exam when under conditions of great stress you just sit down and do it. Probably, I don't know much maths, but probably equations are a different story. It's more like a skill. Can you solve this equation or can you not? And so probably there, a three-hour exam would be more apposite. So I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all. You'll never make everybody completely happy, but you need to decide what you want from who and, yeah, how you're aiming to help them.
Very good. Martin, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to us. That was Martin Worthington, Associate Professor in Middle Eastern Studies at TCT, and an absolute buzzer. You're a star.
Jennifer Zaffarelli. Weekday morning from 9 on 2FM.